Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and history is something that to me is incredibly fascinating. My guest today, Mary Faulkner, is a woman that decided she was going to take on a 30,000-year cycle. Seem like a little bit overwhelming? Mm-hmm. It can be, big time. Imagine that it's all put into a book that is about a little bit over 300 pages. How'd she do it? Well, we're going to be finding out. Mary Faulkner, welcome to the show. Your book, Woman's Spirituality, Power, and Grace, was a most intriguing read. So glad you can join us today.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thanks for your compliments on the book.
Well, I'll tell you, with all the materials that I get, so many times I have books that are just almost like copycats of each other. And when I saw the title, Women's Spirituality, I thought, okay, well, let's see what's going to happen here. Because I learned a long time ago, you don't judge a book by its title.
That's
because
right.
It is not necessarily going to end up being what you perhaps assume it's going to be. And to my delight, your book was one of those that took this into the aspect of the spirituality into a historical format. And not only that, but you have put out so much detail that if anybody ever wanted to research it, that they'd be able to do it. And it's in a book that's just a little over 300 pages. Now, Mary, you have a master's degree in religious education. You've published a number of books, and you're a psychotherapist. You've taught a lot, you've led workshops. Mary, why go and investigate 30,000 years of research?
Well, you know, I kept looking for the bottom line, and the platform from which to launch, and it kept taking me back further and further in time, and it became almost a fascination into itself, just seeing where we began spiritually. It's kind of our spiritual or religious history that hasn't mainstreamed yet. The scholarship is new. It's solid scholarship, but it's new. It hasn't hit the airwaves yet. So I wanted to I just wanted to track it back as far as we could go, and it turns out we were doing stuff, our spiritual practices, 30,000 years ago.
That is something that I think anybody that goes through history, especially if you get away from the traditional history that is taught, you have a chance to get into those records that recently even archaeologists have discovered that are written on stone, or they're on somebody's wall, or some gigantic rock somewhere in the middle of nowhere land that hardly anybody ever gets to visit except the lizards. And all of a sudden you find out that spirituality is something that has always been dealt with. And when you listen to the legends of the Native Americans or any peoples that have been reported and recorded, even if it's by someone that thinks it's a whole bunch of nonsense, it isn't. It goes way, way back.
Absolutely. And the practices are similar around the world, which is another interesting fact. We're more alike than we're different. And especially today when we're involved in so much religious squabbling and religious wars, it's just good to really concentrate on how much we have in common rather than our differences, many of which are manufactured differences. You know, they're not real differences, because we all basically want the same thing out of life. And
I agree.
It's
and it makes you wonder why people decide they're going to go to war over something. And as you, I like your word manufactured. Mm-hmm. And I think the manufacturing of an illusion has created more hell and havoc and warfare than truth has ever done.
Yes, yes. And there's a concept that it becomes clear to me as I read our, you know, all this history, is that all of us are really involved with this one entity. We call this God by different names. But mm-hmm. it's really an acknowledgement that there is this power that infuses all of us and life itself that we're all trying to relate to. But we see, for some reason, we've gotten attracted into all these separate competing ideas. And it's not really, when you stand back far enough, you can see it isn't really a competition. It's really all the same thing.
I agree. I was watching a program on PBS, I believe it was, just a couple of evenings ago, and they were bringing forth people from different denominations, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, and Buddhist, and some others. And all of these people, just like you said, the basicness of it was really right there, and yet you will have individuals, organizations that would go to a war in a flash saying, our way is the only way, your way is the highway, or however we want to say it. Let's go into this, because this book is focused on women's spirituality. And today, and you make this comment in one segment right at the beginning of your book, and I'm going to quote it exactly. Women in the United States at this moment in time probably enjoy more freedom of expression, have more choices, and have more access to education, jobs, and money than has ever been true in any culture throughout recorded history. And that intrigued me because it was my understanding that there were different cultures in Africa and in Egypt where there was a matriarchal situation where women had property, they owned things, they could get a divorce if they wanted to, and this went back for centuries. Why do you feel, and I agree with you, in today's world, I think what we have in America, and we had to fight hard for it, why did you say that in recorded history that you felt that this was the strongest thing?
Well, I use the word recorded. I should have put it in italics, probably, because what you're talking about is absolutely true. There are indigenous people with matriarchal. We, in our own country, a lot of the Native American culture is matriarchal. I used recorded because none of that is in the books. Mm-hmm. It isn't part of our history. When we study the world history, that isn't included.
Well, that's a good response to it, because I think that whenever you talk with people from various cultures, that information, we're sort of disappointed that wasn't carried forward, that
Absolutely.
There was this shift. Now, in your studying, when you were going back in history, because you wanted to find the bottom line, as you described it, what was the earliest period that you were able to go back to? Was it Crete? Was it time before? What was the earliest period?
Well, there's pretty much recorded now of 30,000 years, but then there's been a couple of carvings discovered in one in China and one in someplace else I can't remember right now that are obviously a religious kind of carving, and that goes back 70,000 years.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. So people have been making art, which when you say making art, that means that they have a symbolic understanding, and it's a certain kind of, you know, intelligence that goes into creating symbols and art. So they, mm-hmm. when they see symbols and art, spiritual or religious, then that's an indication that the people are at a certain level of, intelligence, for lack of a better word. I don't like to use that word, but development may be a better word. So these people were not just, you know, cave people, cavemen and cavewomen. They were, mm-hmm. they had the kind of intelligence that we consider intelligent today.
Absolutely, and I think as they get more and more into archaeology, they're going to find that the human being has been on this planet for a lot longer than the traditionalists of history have thought, which is going to change history all the way around.
Yeah, and it's starting to already. I don't know if it's going to get into the books right away, but it is in women's studies anyway that they're looking at it, because those are the times of the matriarchy that people want to. They want to do it. I think the importance of it is to realize that God is both male and female, and that women have a sense of power that is God given, and as does everybody has power. The reason I called it power and grace was because women get kind of backed off of the idea of power. They say, "I don't want it. Don't bother me with that," and yet we need to recognize our power in order to move forward with our ideas. So I teamed it up with grace because I wanted to give one of my main points is that power is God-given and everyone has the same amount of it, and that it's an equal sharing that we have of power, men, women, children, whatever, and really make that point.
You have two women that you mention in your book that I was quite intrigued with. Both of them come from different backgrounds. One is Rosemary Ruther, who is a feminist theologian at the Garrett Theological Seminary, and she's written all kinds of materials. And then you have another woman, Rita Gross. And I was so intrigued with both of these women because they complement just what you've said. And they really have been quite outspoken about this.
Yeah, they are, and they mean business about it. They, women's theology is, it's a serious undertaking, and they have to do it that way to make their point in the established universities and religious orders, and they have to follow that kind of. The intense way that theology and philosophy is written. You have to build your argument and all that. And so they're really heavy hitters. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I think we're very fortunate to be in a position where we can have a voice and where we can talk to other women. And what I liked about your book is there was no bashing here. I get very weary of treat people with a blame game. I am not into at all. But it is, your material is coming from the positioning of, I've become aware of this, I want you to become aware of it, so that as a woman, as a man, if you're going to read this, that you have an understanding of why certain things evolved, good, bad, or indifferent. And I really like that kind of an approach, because I think when we can come from a positioning of knowledge and understanding and viewing from different paradigms with different thought glasses, if you will, it expands us as people. And I think that is so important. We can't just have black and white. It doesn't work that way. Life is not that form at all, in my experience anyway. And in Chapter 6 in your book, I love the title, Rebels, Circles, and Refrigerator Wisdom. I just love that title. And right off the bat, you talk about Catherine Fowler. Now, she was a rebel. But this is a woman that had a tremendous amount of courage, and she's an exquisite artist. You have one of her paintings that she did of herself, and it's so dramatic. It is just absolutely
awesome?
It's beautiful, but it's extremely powerful, because she had some very intense and ugly experiences when she was younger. But she decided she wasn't going along with traditional modalities because they weren't going to work for her. And it was through her art that she was able to really become acquainted with her own individuality, her own spirituality, her own power. Tell us her story.
Well, her name is Catherine Fowler, and she's an artist here in Nashville. And she did have abuse and whatnot as a child and was struggling with that issue as she grew up. And tried therapy, but it didn't resonate with her. And she, being an artist, just went home and began to sit with, and just meditate and get in touch with, I guess, energies inside of her, for lack of a better word, energies or impulses inside of her, and then just paint without thinking, just throw it on the canvas. And her art is just lovely. This piece that's in here is her rebel, and it's just this powerful, powerful woman. And she began to see the rebel as a healer, and that it was operating in her best interest. It was rebelling against things that didn't work for her, and helping guide her in her healing process. And that turned a whole lot of it around for her right there. And then a couple other ones that I saw when I talked with her was her healer, and I think her lover was another one. And that it's about self-love. Now, also loving other people, but it begins with self-love. And the self-love was a real important thing, because when you've been abused, you often come away with shame and, disregard for yourself, and you feel bad about yourself. And that's a big part of healing from abuse, is the issue of shame and beginning to claim yourself again and seeing yourself as good rather than, damaged. So the healer and this rebel and the lover were the three that seemed to function in this story the most, and they're just, all three paintings were just awesome. And she sits in front of the canvas and just goes into a meditative state, and then without interpreting or thinking or anything, she just begins to draw these women's faces. And And then they talk to her, and then they tell her who they are and what they're all about.
That is, I think, extremely healing and very, very powerful. I don't know of many women artists that I have met that have done that, but those that have had some very, very profound insights, because art, color, design, form is just a phenomenal way to be in touch with yourself. And she's just
it is. And now I work in that business. I work with people that have had trauma, and art is just a really good way of accessing their higher self or their healed self, and helping them get a different idea of themselves.
You have a portion in your book about ritual, about setting up what I would describe as a sacred place to honor people. And in many cultures, this is quite common. I know in the Asian culture, this is something that families are very comfortable with, people are very comfortable with. And I am pleased that in many, many parts of the Western culture, this is something that has become more comfortable too. And it doesn't have to be melodramatic or big, but it's that place where you can honor and respect and appreciate those that you've loved, that you want to have as your own space for quiet. You can design it, decorate it any way that you want. And you go into stories about women, especially that have done this, and how much of a difference it's made in their lives. And I know in many native cultures that many of the people that have been very close to the earth, they do this because they have had this wisdom that they passed down, that we're here on this experience for a short time, but you want to honor and respect everything that's around you. And that, to me, is a wonderful philosophy. When you have been working with people and when you've been involved in therapy, how has this made a difference for them? You've got a beautiful story in your book about a woman by the name of Valerie and her grandmother, and they're up in Alaska. And there is a process they go through. Would you share that?
Yeah. They, of course, it's springtime in Alaska, and I say in the book that while we look for robins down south, being the lower 48, eagles return to Alaska and salute, you know, their screaming eagles is what we're looking for. So it was pretty snowy, and they went out to look for things to put on an altar for a spring ritual. And they found the pussy willows blooming in the snow, and the eagle's nest was up above. I don't know if I put the eagle's nest part in there or not, but there was an eagle feather that dropped on the ground. And and then another part of it was that they were making dog biscuits. They were baking dog biscuits with a little cookie cutter, a dog mm-hmm. biscuit cookie cutter, to take to the neighbors, as just they had moved into a new neighborhood, and they were taking it to the neighbors to introduce themselves. So all three items ended up on the altar for a little ritual. And I think we put, I think there was cedar involved in that, too, to kind of show that winter was still in charge, even though the pussy willows were blooming. So it's really tied to nature a lot. And I think most of the altars are very, they use stones and shells and feathers and things that are connecting us to nature.
It's beautiful the way you've woven these stories in. I really like the statement in your book where you said there's freedom in taking yourself as you are. From then on, you do what you want to do because you want to do it, not to please anyone or to make yourself feel worthy. You are worthy. This is something that I think many times for women, it's exceedingly difficult to make that okay. It all depends on what the indoctrination has been, what the cultural, social environment has been, what your personality type is. There's all of these things that are mixed in together. And I think when a woman comes into that awareness of herself, there is this tremendous freedom. Harriet Tubman is a woman that I have such an admiration and respect for, and I really only truly became aware of Harriet in a deeper sense. I was familiar with her name, but a deeper sense, I'd say just in the last 5 years, there was a lot of material that I came across. And I thought, this is a woman born in the early 1800s. My goodness, she came in with a package that just was phenomenal. And how she would just stand up and be counted and carried a gun on her hip and wasn't afraid to make people find their own courage, male or female. She was an incredible woman and highly, highly intuitive.
Yes, those stories of those early, the early women in our history, in the United States history, are just awesome stories. And, you know, her story and some of the others that are in the book, the common thing that I find in women's spirituality, why is it women's spirituality? Well, it's not just women. It's you know, other people have the same virtues and goals and things that they want to accomplish. But women are really about helping each other. They really see a peaceful world. We really want peace and prosperity for everyone. We want everybody's children to be fed. And these become spiritual issues that are more that are voiced more often among women. And it's not about power and gaining and that sort of thing. With women, it's more about the real simple feed the kids and have a place to get in out of the rain. It's really grounded in this life, what we need to succeed in this life.
You also bring up a woman, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and
yeah.
I really appreciated her attitudes because she, in her time, which was in the 1800s, she wrote the Woman's Bible. She urged women to reject anything that held them back and to question any religious or political doctrines they interpreted to be harmful to women. And I think, wow, this is something we still have to do today.
I know. Yeah. That is so amazing to me. And she was so spunky. I mean, she did this back then. And sure, she took a lot of heat for it, certainly. But you would today, too. If you came out with a new Bible that was that like she did, and you had blacked out all the bad references to about women, you'd have a very thin document.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You really would. And then you also have another woman that you mentioned, and I was not familiar with her, Mary McLeod Bethune.
Yes,
and when
an
I
educator.
Read about her, yes, I read about her, and I said, "Oh my goodness!" And then to find out that Eleanor Roosevelt, who really was the one that opened the doors for women in media, there were so many things that she did to pave the way for women in many ways. And you said Bethune's credo, "Do not stop thinking of life as an adventure. You have no security unless you live bravely, excitingly, imaginatively, unless you can choose a challenge rather than competence." My goodness, wouldn't that be terrific if we could teach that to the young men and women today?
Yes, that is really inviting, isn't it? It's
what
exciting.
It
hooks your imagination.
Oh, it's great. Absolutely great. I just love all of these stories about the different people that you have. You have Wilma Mankiller, and she was a Native American. And this was in the 1990s.
Yeah, she didn't die that long ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she was the first woman head of the Cherokee Nation.
And among the Cherokees, when you go back into their history, they had a great deal of respect and regard for the women.
Oh, yes. See, the whole culture, the whole Native American culture is organized according to women's principles. And so you do have that, even if they're not the leader, the society is built with a real true respect for women and children.
Mm-hmm. It's just marvelous. Your material, you go through so many aspects of history. You talk about the breadth of cultural environments. For you to do this research, I mean, let's face it, 30,000 years of history is a heck of a lot of time to have to cover. How long did you research on this book?
What did you just say? Ask me what?
How much time did it take you to do this research?
Oh, well, it's hard to say because I read a lot of it over a period of time, and then I had to go back and kind of pull it together again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I added a lot of new material when I was writing the book. It took me about 3 years on this round of writing it. And that includes some research I had done earlier. But even though I had done some of the reading and research, I had to do it over again to make it cohesive. So it was about 3 years I've got a lot of books stacked up in my office.
Well, I can imagine. And when I think of how women in the arena of medicine are making such tremendous strides with therapeutic medicine, when I think of them in so many different arenas that they were forbidden to be in,
mm-hmm.
not all that long ago, and how, at least in the United States, there is a prevalent attitude among women, young women, that they just have the right to do things. They are totally oblivious because they haven't had the experience otherwise, unless they've lived in other countries, that they can't do it. And I think this is
marvelous. I know. It's kind of fun to watch.
It's marvelous to watch.
Yeah.
Now, with your book, I know you said you don't have a website, but the people can find out about your book at any bookstore. It's called Women, Spirituality, Power, and Grace, but it really is a history book. And for those of you who are listening, male or female, I don't care, this gives an insight into why certain things disappeared, why other things went underground, and why we're beginning to become alive again with an understanding of how what has happened in the past. There are aspects that we need to let go, but there are aspects that we need to honor and respect so that we bring them forth into a form that demonstrates itself today in a way that's going to expand the association and balance in life. And Mary, I think you've done a wonderful job with this book. I really do. And I'm so delighted that you've been able to be with me today, and I wish you nothing but the best in all of your endeavors.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate what you just said. I wish I had written it all down. your statement there is just profound. It's wonderful to hear, too.
Well, I think it's time that we wake up and get out of this attitude that it's the guys against the gals against the guys. No, let's work together. And
yes,
understand
absolutely.
That each have their strengths, each have their weaknesses, but for heaven's sakes, we've got to stop the stupidity and the ignorance that creates such misery around
yeah.
the world
yeah.
because of what I call the three enemies, fear, ignorance, and superstition.
I like that.
It's been a delight, Mary Faulkner. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you, Don. I really appreciate the time.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Women's Spirituality, Mary Faulkner, M-A-R-Y-F-A-U-L-K-N-E-R. Why don't you check it out? Become aware of the fact that there's a lot of powerful people that have created much of what we have today, but you're also one of power. And you can make a difference, not just for today, but affecting other generations coming up. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back right now.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, This is Donna Sebo. I know we've got a caller on the line. Quick like a bunny, I want to remind you, my showtime is changing to 9 o'clock in the morning as of the 1st of May. So be sure you make that notation. Let's take a caller, which, by the way, if you want to call in and chat with me, 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call in to. Let's go to the phone line. I want to welcome the caller, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hello, my name is Alan.
Hi, Alan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing? I'm calling from New York, Long Island.
New York. I'm going to be in New York next week.
Well, where are you going to be at?
I am going to be in Manhattan. I'm going to be doing an appearance there. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm only going to be there for a couple of days, but I am going to be seeing some people. But let's get down to business with you, and then I'll give you the rest of the information on that. First thing, Alan, that I am observing with you is the word organization. So I think that you have got a number of loose ends in your life at this time, and they are on a personal level, they're on a professional level, and you're feeling as you're stuck between a rock and a hard spot. Well, you're not really. I would encourage you to really sit down with a pad of paper and a pen and list every single thing that needs to be taken care of. I don't care if it's bills, I don't care if it's dealing with a mother-in-law or trying to find a job, whatever it is. Just write it down, what you feel you must take care of. Itemize it all out. And then look at what you might be able to take care of, let's say within a week, and deal with that. And try to organize your priorities so that you don't feel like you're suffocating, that you don't feel like you're overwhelmed. And it's a very simple thing to do, but not so simple, because your mind is going to go into so many different directions. But the writing helps you to get your focus into place. I also want to encourage you to have your time of meditation and to have that quiet time. And if you want to use music to help you do that, that's okay. Set a timer, 15 minutes, a half hour, and eventually it will be a process that you will find you can do automatically just about any time, any place, anywhere. You can do it sitting on the subway, on the bus. It wouldn't make any difference. And it will allow you to release tension. But also, I want you to continue your education. You're a man that I think has a great deal of skill, especially at doing things with your hands. You've got a creative aspect of skill that if you were able to implement it, I think it is a great stress manager. I think of a guy that I knew once that worked as a butcher in a major grocery store chain. And when he'd go home at night to work off the stress, he'd did duck decoys. And this guy was just incredible at what he was able to create. And it just, he could lose himself. And in many ways, it was like a form of meditation. But he became extremely skilled in his artistic expression and won a number of national awards for his wonderful, wonderful talent. And I think for you, whether it would be cabinetry, whether it be duck decoys, whether it would be paintings, whatever it is, you need to be able to get into that side of yourself that is so exceedingly colorful and creative and express it in some way. And I think it's going to transform your life. But you've got a very intense year this year. You've got a lot of hard work that you have to take care of. And it's exceedingly important that you pay attention to detail, because you want to get rid of this excess stuff that you don't need to be bothered with anymore. So it's going to be that organization and that methodical attention that makes a difference. Do you have a question for me?
No. Everything you said was like really right on point. I just wanted to ask, do you see anybody around me that passed away?
Well, actually, there's a number of people around you that I'm seeing that have passed over. But what I'm interested in is the individual, and you have the capacity of seeing those on the other side. This is something that runs in your family. But there is a man that is in a Civil War uniform, and the word I'm getting is the Confederacy. And I am looking at him, and there is something in the family history that needs to be addressed. And he said, there's something that has been hidden for a long time, and it needs to be aired. Now, this is fascinating to me, because I don't see where you would really have very much knowledge about who this man is. He wasn't very big in stature. He looked like he was pretty small in build, but yet he had some pretty big hands. And I think he was very, very skilled in whatever he did do. But I'm seeing in the uniform, and apparently there's an old photograph of him somewhere, and I believe it might be in a museum. Now, I'll tell you what I think, if you ever have the opportunity to do it, you should consider doing. And that is your family genealogy, and also maybe having a DNA test done. Because I think that it is going to give you an insight into some family history that is going to be absolutely incredible for you to find out about. But you've okay. got some link with this man, and he looks so old to me when I'm looking at this old photograph. Of course, I think a lot of people did at that time. They aged. They didn't live very long, and they aged very, very quickly. But he looked to me like he might have been about 35 years of age, which, to be a soldier at that time, they took everybody they possibly could. They needed as many fighting men as they possibly could get. And I think, believe it or not, I think he willingly joined. I think he became a part of it. I don't think he was forced. I think he chose to be a part of it. But I don't know that he could read. I don't think so. I don't think he could read. But he's a part of your family history.
Okay.
Was there someone in particular you had wanted to ask about? Because I see more than one person that's passed over that's in your family.
My mom had passed away.
When did she pass away?
Just this past October.
Last year, okay. Your mother is an extremely strong woman. She had a very, very, what I'd call, big personality. I don't know that she was able to do a tenth of what she would have liked to have done. And I think that there were some physical problems that bothered her for most of her life, but she just said, this is what I'm going to take care of. But I'm not picking up a lot about your mom at this moment. I keep getting this man from the Confederacy, and I have no clue, other than what I've told you, about where to find this photo and how it's related to you. But your mother is not coming through to me.
Okay.
But I'll tell you this, your mother will visit you more than once, and you'll know it.
Okay.
She'll be very specific and very direct in her information to you, too.
Okay, thank you so much, Mrs. Siegel.
You're very welcome, Alan. And for those of you who are listening in New York, I am going to be there for a couple of days, and I will be available for private appointments. I'm also going to be traveling up to the far north. I'm going to be going shortly after I get back from New York. I'm going to be heading on up to Alaska. I'll be in Fairbanks and Anchorage. So if you're in any of those locales and you would like to connect with me for a private in-person meeting, all you have to do is call me at my office at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. And I've got some speaking appearances in Washington, and there's other things that are going on, so more of that will be coming out in the newsletter when it comes out on the 1st of next month. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we are going to be taking a break shortly, but before we do, I want to let you know tomorrow we're going to be talking about a mystery. Oh, this is such a fascinating mystery. It's called The Valentino Formula. Michael Oldham is going to be my guest. And this is a mystery that will keep you gripped the whole time. We're not going to give away all the secrets. But if you know anything about Hollywood, Rudolph Valentino was a beloved, beloved movie star. And he was a handsome guy. So there's going to be a theme with this that I think will be a fun one to discuss. So anyway, that is tomorrow, and we'll be giving you the real thing when we have the show tomorrow at the same time, same place, right here at BBS. Let's take a break for a minute, and when we come back, those phone lines are open for you at 888-627-6008. And have a pad of pen, a paper and a pen handy. If you're not calling in, I'm going to share with you lemony sautéed spinach and mushrooms. Yum. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, I have a wonderful story about a kitty named Bumpus that I wanted to share with you. But before I do that, if you're like me and you love veggies, but you'd like to do something a little bit different with them, this recipe is marvelous. It reminds me of the sautéed spinach. It's very different, but a sautéed spinach that my husband and I, whenever we go to this particular Chinese restaurant, which we dearly love their food, this dish we always get because we love the flavors in the spinach. And, of course, you know how good spinach is for you. Well, sometimes it can have, well, a sort of a blah flavor to it, depending on who prepares it. So this is something you can do at home, and it is, I can't say it's no-cal, but it's literally negligible, the calories. And you might want to try this same kind of a recipe, not just using spinach, but maybe trying it with kale. And you might even want to try it with cabbage. Yep. Any of your greens, this probably would work very nicely with, if this is according to your taste. Now, this is what you're going to need. A tablespoon of olive oil. You're going to need about 3 cups of mushrooms. That's about a half a pound of your raw mushrooms. And, of course, you want to wipe them off and then slice them up. You're going to need 1 large shallot. And you want to chop that, and that's going to be about 1/4 cup. Now, if you don't have any shallots, just use an ordinary onion. You could even use red onion if you wanted to. 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/8 teaspoon of pepper, 1/4 cup of white wine, or you can use your favorite broth. It could be chicken, beef, vegetable, whatever you like, and then 1 10-ounce package of baby spinach. And this is your fresh baby spinach. And then you're going to need about 1/2 teaspoon of grated lemon zest. Now, what I will say with this is if you use the freshly grated lemon zest, you will have a much more fragrant and flavorful taste. But if you don't have that, then use the dried. Just soak it a little bit, if you will, like in the olive oil. Now, what you're going to do, you heat a large nonstick skillet, and it's over medium-high heat. You're going to put in your mushrooms, your shallot, your salt, and pepper. Now, you're going to cook this until it just begins to brown. And that takes about 5 or 6 minutes, depending on the size of the pan. If you're using a wok, this is a great thing to use for this. Then you add your wine, and you're going to keep it at that high heat, and you're going to keep stirring it until the wine evaporates. All you're going to have is the flavor. It takes about a minute or two. Then you're going to put that on a warmed plate, and then you're going to toss into that pan your spinach, and you're going to cover it because that helps to wilt it. Spinach, any of your greens like that, have a lot of moisture in them, and it'll wilt really fast. It takes 2 or 3 minutes, if that. And then what you do, you stir in your mushroom mixture and your freshly grated zest with it, and you just serve it right away. So this is something you can have fixed in 5 minutes. If you're a vegetarian, it's wonderful. If you're non-vegetarian, it's wonderful. It'll go with chicken, it'll go with beef, whatever you like. But it is light, it is flavorful, and it just gives you something a little bit different with a vegetable that we know is very, very good for us. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat at 888-627-6008. Oh, by the way, if you wanted to serve this for children, because kids may or may not be comfortable with the flavors, but just eliminate the white wine. You don't need to worry about having the wine. And just use the broth. Use extra broth. And you've got, again, a delicious dish. I wanted to tell you about Bumpus. I just think that stories like this are, well, they touch your heart. They, more than that, they make you aware of something that lots of times people like to ignore, and that is that animals really care and that they are very loving creatures. And for those of us that are fans of dogs and cats and ferrets and birds and all kinds of things, all kinds of living creatures, we know that the animal kingdom is something that we have got a long road to travel before we totally understand it. And as we are part of the animal kingdom, other creatures have emotions and cares and concerns like we do, maybe just because they can't talk, they can't express it. But this is a story that I find is just very special. The lady that shared the story, her name is Janine, and this is a cat that was called, described as a Maine Coon. I've never heard of that description, but it was a Maine Coon type of cat. It was found by some firefighters, and his fur has a mixture of colors in it, but it's predominantly orange, and he was burned very, very badly. They rescued him, and they said what was amazing, as badly burned as he was, he still was purring, and because he was burned so badly, he lost the toes on his paws. But he was given the name of Bumpus. Why, I don't know, but this cat survived. Nobody expected this cat to survive. And he learned to walk, even though his toes had to be amputated. It was just amazing. Now, the rescue volunteers who were helping to care for this animal that had suffered so badly after this horrible fire. Well, one of the volunteers, her name was Sharon, she decided she was going to bring her home. And she had long been involved with taking care of sick kitties and animals that had suffered. And so this, she just absolutely continued this work. Now, here she has Bumpus. And Bumpus is very happy being with her, being in the home. She brings home a litter of kittens. And two of these kittens had really been seriously injured. They both had lost legs. And there were all kinds of things wrong with the other litter. And one of the little kittens, she just didn't know what she was going to do with them. But you know what? She did something, and it was on pure instinct. The kittens had to be protected, but they weren't doing very well. Now, Bumpus was living with her, and she kept Bumpus isolated. Do you know what? She opened the door. Bumpus went into that room went up to this one kitty that was in such bad condition, literally put its paws around this baby kitten and began licking the baby's head. Well, that was it. It was instant love. And do you know that because of Bumpus, those kitties all survived? She takes him. He's such a compassionate creature that she takes him to visit sick kids in hospitals. And what's amazing is that the kids look at Bumpus, no toes. Here's the story of how he survived a fire. And these kids are amazed. They are changed. They feel like if Bumpus can take care of things, by golly, they can get past their own fears. It's an awesome, awesome story. And my hat's off to Sharon for being such a loving caretaker and for Janine for sharing this story. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Who you are makes a difference. Don't ever for a moment believe that you don't have the right to be the person you really are and that you don't have the right to live your life with grace and with power. You do. You've got it. Use it. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.